Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Cause and Effect Radio, brought to you by UHY Advisors. Now, here's your hosts.
Lee Cantor here, Cause and Effect Radio, and I got with me Frank Fanella. How you doing, Frank?
I'm great. How are you doing, Lee?
I am doing well. And who do you got with you?
Cindy Hanafy.
Hello.
You got the dream team today.
Yes, we're very fortunate.
So you guys recently were at a shared services conference in Orlando. First of all, shared services, they have a whole conference for that. What's that about?
Shared service, they do. It's actually the largest conference in the country. Large organizations or even small to mid-sized organizations, whenever you have functions within a company, like back office type things, for example, payroll, accounts payable, general accounting, reconciliations. If it's happening in the organization throughout the company or throughout the country, you can actually centralize all those activities to one place. And right. They called that a shared service center. And so when there's common processes and application of those processes, that's what companies do. And this whole conference here is about how to make them more efficient, more effective, and to grow them. Cindy, would you like to add anything?
It was an exciting conference. So we had a booth there. We participated in a lot of the sessions, and we also gave a couple of sessions. Frank led a panel discussion with three of our customers around their shared service growth and experience, and I led a workshop on change management.
Now, shared service, is this a new concept, or has this been around forever?
It's been around for a long time. It's but it's been growing in popularity. And as a matter of fact, it's been interesting to me over the last several years to realize how many companies are still relatively immature in their shared service setups. Mm-hmm. It's difficult. A lot of times when you have things happening on the field, let's say you're a manufacturing organization, and you have accounting happening at the plant level, you're having it at a corporate, and then you want to pull it into a centralized shared service location. A lot of times the folks out in the plants or the locations feel like they're losing control and visibility. So there's a lot of change that has to go into making sure that that happens effectively because they really don't. It's really more of a perception issue.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of times there's a strategy for pulling things out from the field mm-hmm. into a central area. And, you know, the strategy isn't always followed. Sometimes the processes are done differently out in field locations. So you're bringing in processes that have to be executed, same processes, but executed differently. So standardizing those processes before you bring them in is, you know, a really good idea.
And I would imagine in today's world where there's so many mergers and acquisitions that that just creates a level of complexity that exacerbates those problems.
True. It absolutely does. And a lot of the M&A deals that are and the analysis that are put together puts a cost-effective savings into the deal for pulling in these services together. And a lot of times it takes companies a long time to do it because it's, you know, you've got different cultures, you've got different processes.
And oftentimes that's underestimated how difficult mm-hmm. it actually is. You think of something like accounts payable, well, how different
right. How different could it be, right?
Well, it's different.
and it can vary very dramatically. Everything from how they're processed to approvals to whether there's purchase orders mm-hmm. or not purchase orders. It can be a huge spectrum.
And then it's one of those things that sound like a simple thing or an easy to solve thing, but it probably creates a lot of confusion and frustration for employees, and it might even affect morale and culture of the company if it's not handled properly, right?
Yeah, sometimes what we see is you may have a manual process for one business function, maybe a more automated for another, or maybe they're vendors are sending their invoices in one location and another vendor is sending in at a different location. It does get confusing. And then, you know, everybody thinks that maybe accounts payable is the enemy, but they're not.
Right. Yeah. And now at this conference, is the purpose to kind of just share best practices or what happens there?
I think it's twofold. One is to network with your peers to understand what's happening in other companies around the country. While we're all different, there are a lot of similarities, and there might be ideas that could be the tipping point for your organization to help you become better. There's an opportunity for organizations like UHY, along with their customers, to share the best practices that they're seeing out in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And then finally, it's to bring to light new and innovative technologies, new and innovative processes, mm-hmm. so that you're really staying ahead of the curve with your organization and help make sure that you're building the best shared service organization you can.
Now, you mentioned that a lot of companies think that they should be doing better, but they are getting frustrated or they are struggling with it. What are some symptoms of a company struggling in this area?
Every company there is at a different maturity level with their shared service functions. So it could be from standardizing processes, having different processes, different people doing the same type of service, but doing it differently. You may have things, such as, technology. There may be varying technologies within the same group also. Mm-hmm. So you may have your accounts payable processing late. You could, God forbid, have payroll go out late, something like that. So those are some of the symptoms of not having your processes.
Yeah. Now, when UHY decides to go to an event like this, how do you kind of define what you're trying to get out of it and how you're going to, kind of maximize the investment into a conference like this?
Well, for us, when you look across what UHY does, from our enterprise optimization, which is our transformation services, our digital transformation practice, which helps companies select the newest technology software, make sure that they're the right processes in place and really the right business strategy around technology. You look at our cybersecurity and technology practices. You look at our accounting automation practice. It really just covers everything that we do. And it's really a central place that we can help our clients the most mm-hmm. across everything that they touch. Yeah. And, a lot of times when we're brought in, it's because the client's having a challenge with something. And what we've seen over the last 10 years or so is that companies were establishing their shared service centers. There was a movement that said, hey, you know what? You can take all those functions and bring them into a shared service center and then fix your process. And what they would do is they'd bring them in either to an internal shared service center or they'd outsource it to somebody else. And they say, okay, now we're going to fix the process. The problem is that they let the people with the institutional knowledge go. Mm-hmm. And so now they're stuck.
That's how they fixed it?
They didn't, they thought it was going to be simple. It's AP. How hard can it be?
Right.
And so oftentimes we're brought in afterwards and it touches everything, going back to the diagnosis to understand what's going on, helping them redesign to create the new process, how to help create accountability structure to make sure that they keep those new processes in place.
They're in essence kind of outsourcing some of that to you guys.
But more around optimizing their people, process, and technology. Mm-hmm. We're just helping them get their functions organized to optimize, lean out their processes, capitalize on their technology better mm-hmm. So they can be more efficient.
Now, in what ways did you participate in this conference? You mentioned you exhibited, or did you do any speaking?
Yeah, well, I did a panel with some of our clients talking about their experience through this change and setting up shared service centers. And we had different levels of maturity, some that were new, some that were established, some that were in transition. But the hit of the show was Cindy's session, which she did a training on change management. I'll let Cindy kind of talk through that.
Yeah, the title of the workshop was Change Management, Driving Innovation Through a Culture of Continuous Improvement. Mm-hmm. Change management is the science of managing change within an organization. Okay, there's a really good professional definition for
there's
you,
There's
right?
a science to this?
There's a science to it. It's a very controlled identification and implementation of required change. And just change happens in an organization, whether you're putting in a new ERP system or maybe you purchased a new company and you're integrating, just like we talked about earlier. Maybe you have a change in leadership, like a new CEO or a crisis, new product launch, product sunset. Change happens. And change can be very disruptive and it can have a profound impact on the company's organization, their operations, their technology, and their people.
Now, change is occurring at all times,
mm-hmm.
right? So, we have to make a note and say that this is change management. Like to me, it's kind of confusing. Like, change is happening, and it's kind of organically occurring at all times. And then management, how do you manage something that's all around you happening all the time?
I'll let Cindy tell you the how. But I've said this on previous shows as well, is that change in and of itself, there's this misconception that people don't like change. And yes, change happens around you all the time. And some change is good, some change is neutral, and some change can have a negative impact. The challenge that people have is the uncertainty around the change, not knowing what it means to them as an individual, let alone what it means to the organization. And so anytime there's a significant change, having a process or a program in place to make sure that you're keeping people informed, educating them, making sure that they're aware of how they play into the change is critical. And I'll let Cindy address some of that.
Yeah, so UHY runs a virtual roundtable called The Exchange. And we took an informal poll around change management. And what we found is that 69% of the companies that we surveyed said that there was a disparity between what they expected and what they really got. So they weren't quite ready for the change like they thought they were.
So is that at all levels or is that only at the senior levels?
It's at all levels, unfortunately. And the reasons for that is there could be many. I mean, there could be no change strategy that's in place. So you're just kind of, you know, doing it by the seat of your pants. Lack of management alignment. Maybe you don't have your management team together or in the same, you know, locked arms on the strategy and the goal. You know, maybe it's not led from the top. You're not involving all layers of the organization. But the big thing we find is we haven't prepared a culture for our employees for that change. What we see when we, a lot of times when we go into organizations and we're doing diagnostics around processes, when we ask employees, hey, why do you do this way? They tell us one of two things. This is the way I learned, right, or this is the way we've always done it.
Those probably aren't the best answers,
those
right?
Those are not the best answers.
I guess if those are the answers, that's a symptom maybe of a bigger problem.
It's a culture change. Right. It's understanding the whys. And change can be exciting if the culture is ready for change.
Now, from a leadership standpoint, is this something, does culture have to be from the top down?
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's no way around that. You can try to have change happen from the bottom up, and you can have a revolution or a change that starts from the ground up that moves upward. But for that change to actually be adopted and sustained, leadership has to buy in. So I've seen lots of organizations where you'll have individuals or teams of people say, we're going to make this better and we're going to work to it. But when you make a change, it doesn't only impact you. It impacts the processes and the people around you. And if there's no top-level sponsorship or buy-in, those other groups might say, well, we don't like that change. We weren't a part of that change. We don't want to do anything with it. And then everything starts to die on the vine and revert back to the way it was before.
Now, how important is kind of a level of transparency and sharing so that you don't have kind of the frontline people maybe imagining something and then the higher-ups thinking something else is occurring and there's like a disconnect?
Three words: communication, communication, communication. That is so key in a change environment.
But is it just the communication? Isn't their action speaking louder than their words?
I think there has to be an alignment between mm-hmm. the two. Mm-hmm. So your actions and your words have to mean the same and be the same thing. We've had situations where clients, the change is actually going to result in potential turnover or layoffs within the organization. And we've been asked the question, do we tell them now that we think that's going to happen or do we wait until we know? And we're big believers, as soon as you recognize that something's going to happen, you communicate it. Be on the table with people. This goes back to people being uncertain about the change.
Right.
Once they know what the impact to them is and what you're going to do during that transition and to help them, they tend to get more comfortable. And we've seen organizations where there's going to be significant turnover. We've communicated up front, explained to them what we're going to do for them. And the turnover during the project was relatively low because they knew when it was happening, what was happening to them. It's when they're scared or they're nervous. And typically, you don't lose your worst performers during those nervous times. You lose your best performers because they're the ones that go, I can go someplace else and do this job. Why do I need to do it here?
Right. And it's one of those things where even if senior management isn't communicating it, the front lines kind of get a sense for it. And, you know, they're going to be talking about it and worrying about it and making plans anyway, right? I mean, there's no escape from this.
My favorite saying is the truth is like the sun. It always rises. Right? So the sooner and the faster you can communicate information out that's meaningful and true, the more likely that you'll be able to get people enrolled and helping support you through the change.
And it's like you said, Cindy, about communication. You just can't do it enough, right?
Right. That's, you know, 90% of a project manager's job is communication. And everything that we do, every change that happens, we're project managers over our functions.
So now when you were giving your talk, how was it received?
Well, I'd like to say that it was well received. We had a standing room only. Mm-hmm. We were maxed out and our number of attendees actually had 5 people, I think, that snuck in. So it was really good.
So this is something that's obviously an important and it's a top of mind for the people in your kind of world, right?
Yeah, I'll even add to that for Cindy's session is that this was at the conference. They have some pre-sessions that the attendees actually have to pay an additional fee to participate in. So it's an optional event. And so Cindy's was sold out. And then again, there were standing room only at the event because this is one of the hottest buttons. Mm-hmm. If you don't get this right, you can do everything else correct. You could have the best processes, you could have the best technology, but at the end of the day, your project won't be successful.
So true. So some of the companies in our exchange that we polled basically said that, you know, they've been going through this change and they've had a period where they felt like they were ready.
Right.
But when they went through it, they actually weren't ready. So mm-hmm. great education to, you know, help other companies prepare for a better change management.
Now, what's it look like when a company gets it right?
Sunshine and roses.
Yes, it does. No, unicorns and rainbows.
Really, look, even if you get it right, there's going to be change, there's going to be turnover, there's going to be people that buy in, there's people that's not. But at the end of the day, you're going to end up with a culture that accepts the change, mm-hmm. they feel like they were part of the change, and the most important thing is the change will sustain. Mm-hmm. You won't have people fighting you along the way, meaning that they're rejecting new process changes or, you know, we're referred to as a passive-aggressive behavior. I'll agree throughout the change process, but once the eyes are off of me, I'm going to revert back to what I was doing before. Mm-hmm. So if you do it right, you have now laid a foundation, you're better than you were before, and you have a culture for continuous improvement so that you're always getting it better.
Yep. So like we said earlier, we want to change that mindset from this is the way we've always done it, and we want to shift to, hey, this is why we do it, and I think we could do it better if. And that's what we want, you know, the end result to be.
And so when they're on this kind of continuous improvement culture track, it's like you said, it's a different mindset. It's they're looking at their day-to-day in a different way than they had before.
Absolutely. You know, one of our polled companies, a quote from one of them said, culture of the organization is a huge factor in successful change. And culture has to be the foundation. And it is a different way. If your people are prepared for the change and the culture is prepared for the change, that transformation will come, will happen naturally.
Now, during the talk, did you give them some actionable kind of things around how to do this?
We sure did. Let me just explain a little bit more about the workshop. It was change management driving innovation through a culture of continuous improvement. So innovation it's derived from ideas. And what we wanted to do was to start helping them create the culture where their employees can come to the table with ideas so that we can help change our environment and have a continuous improvement.
And that's an important component of this, to have kind of this free flow of ideas where the employee feels comfortable to share and, you know, that they're going to be listened to and heard.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Cindy did an exercise with a paperclip. And her message for the first part of the session was that ideas are free. Mm-hmm. And so she had every table, everybody were to write down how they would use a paperclip, ideas for using a paperclip. And each table, each person maybe came up with 5 to 6 different ideas for a paperclip. And then she said, okay, I'm going to give you all another minute. I want you guys to collaborate as a table. And then those numbers went up to 15, 16 different ideas. And just to reinforce that sharing ideas creates new ideas and that ideas are free.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So again, the best ideas for change come from your employees. Your biggest asset are the people in your organization. So we want to create a culture where they feel free to come, and we want to create that environment where they are free to come with ideas. Mm-hmm. And again, ideas are free. We want to cultivate those. So just a couple of quick little things. Boardroom Inc. Company averages 104 ideas per employee annually. Its sales per employee are 7 times higher than its average competitor. So ideas
it's
result
not a coincidence.
It's not a coincidence. Richter Sounds is in the Guinness Book of World Records for having the highest sales per square foot of retail space. Their employees average 20 ideas per year. Mm-hmm. So it means something. It has a financial impact on the organization.
And like you said, it's one of these things where the senior leadership, from a cultural standpoint, has to unleash the employees to share. Mm-hmm. Like it's a safe environment. And that they're going to be rewarded. And it's probably a level of expectation now, right? You want to get it to a point where it's expected of you now as part of your job is to come up with ideas.
That's so true. And, you know, to create that value and to create an effective change management strategy, it's engaging the employees early on in the process, making them feel a part.
You know, it's interesting. And if you think about this, and if you look at almost every organization, as leadership moves further and further up in the organization, the less they know about what actually happens at the front line. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes the idea generation is seen to be a management activity. And they sit in the room and they come up and brainstorm with the things that they need to do to make something better. But at the end of the day, they don't really have the current perception or the actual experience with what's going on. So the ideas are based on some assumptions. But by pushing those ideas down, creating that environment where anybody can share an idea, that's where you can get the real ones. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that are going to be the most impactful. And most importantly, the ones that if you decide to implement a change around them, most likely to be accepted.
Mm-hmm. Right, because they're the ones who came up with it.
Exactly.
They're not being told what to do. They're the ones who are instigating the...
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we had a client... where we were helping them with their AP transformation. And our methodology for our transformation is very much based on getting the ideas from the people at the front line. And we did a major transformation for their AP group. And at the end of the transformation, the head of accounts payable went to the executive director and said, no, I really like those folks from UHY, but 80% of those ideas were ours. And the client came back to me and she said, Frank, I know that's not true. You guys had all those ideas. And I said, what are you talking about? That's fantastic. Who cares where the idea came from? If they feel and believe that those ideas are theirs, they're going to embrace them, they're going to sustain them, and they're going to want to make them better.
And right, they're taking ownership.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You're halfway there, right?
Exactly.
Now, is that hard for you to communicate to senior leaders that, because don't they think like I'm getting paid for being the smart guy in the room, and now I'm kind of giving some of that power up, and I won't be as valuable?
Well, you really hit the nail on the head. I think there's twofold to that. One is the senior leadership expects that. And then number two, when hiring an outside firm like UHY, they expect us to be the smartest people in the room. And UHY, we take a different approach. We say, look, we know a lot about process, but we'll never know everything about your company. So we don't want to come in and be the smartest person in the room. We want your front line to be the smartest. And our job is to take all those ideas, all that knowledge, and help craft a solution. And I will tell you, there are some companies that get it, but there are some management that just don't grasp that yet. They still feel that those ideas need to come from outside or they need to come from leadership.
That's so true. So, but if put in successfully, this process, this culture will instill that employee passion and that ownership. And it'll set a solid foundation for adapting to change. And it taps into the institutional knowledge.
Now, is there a UHY methodology around this continuous improvement culture?
There absolutely is. We call it Optimal Performance Management System. You'll hear me say OPMS a lot.
And can you share a little bit about that? Or is that the secret sauce that you got to call you in order to get that?
Yeah, it's the secret sauce, but we're going to share it with you that we also shared in the workshop, 5 main pillars mm-hmm. for developing your own optimal performance management system. The first one is measure. So we all know what gets measured gets done, right?
Sure.
So measures help us gauge our progress. So in our workshop, we talked first about deciding what is our common goal for shared services? What do we want to be? What kind of service entity do we want to be? We also talked about service level agreements versus key results indicators versus key performance indicators. Which one should we be using? And the key is use the one that you can drive all the way down to the employee level.
And that's an important part of this. If you don't know how you want the story to end, it's hard to get there, right? Yeah.
What's your goal? What's your service goal? What do you want to be? Do you want to be fully automated? Do you want to be a self-service? Do you want to be a personalized service? Do you want a combination? What does your organization want to be?
And you have to be clear on that, right? There has to be clarity of message so that it can be communicated so everybody is kind of rowing the same way.
Exactly. So we talked about, those different measures and how to measure, once you have your goal, figuring out what measures are important to measure how well you're doing around your goal. So we talked about the service level approach. We talked about aligning our goals to that approach. We talked about designing measures to support those goals and then making sure that you could take those measures and you could drill them down to the employee level so that they're accountable and they own those metrics and they understand what good performance looks like and how they support the goals of the organization.
Right, because if they don't buy in, this is destined to fail.
That's true.
Yeah. And then really kind of the next step is once you've done that, you have to empower them. Mm-hmm. You have to give them the ability to now take ownership over these new processes and give them the tools to be able to identify when there's opportunities for something to get better, when there's opportunities to improve, when something breaks, how do they handle it? Oftentimes what you'll see in organizations is somebody will have responsibility for a process, something will break, and they have to get their job done. And so they'll create another way to get it done without ever really raising it up to management. And that now becomes a new suboptimal process that becomes part of the transfer of knowledge that happens when others are teaching the next generation. And all of a sudden, the process continues to degrade. But mm-hmm. you empower them to make the change. You empower them to raise it up to management. You make sure that there's a process for them to do that, a regular process, and then give them the tools to get things fixed and the support to get things fixed.
Now, is this sequential? Like, do you have to get the measurement right before you empower, or does the empowering happen before you start measuring?
I think you need to know what to measure. And so that when you hand it over to the employee, okay, here's your processes, here's your job role, here's how we're going to measure you. This aligns up with a goal. So measure really needs to happen first.
Mm-hmm. And you're also teaching them how to actually measure and to make sure there's consistency and then the holding people accountable to those measures. It's very common, I said you'll touch on this in a minute, but we'll set a measure or metric and then we'll stop watching it. And so what happens is then that metric to the employees becomes irrelevant because I was hitting that goal. Nobody's ever talking about it anymore. I missed the goal. Nobody said anything. So it must not be important anymore. So, you know, the rule is no longer valid. It's no longer a rule. So having all those processes in place to ensure that things are working mm-hmm. are important.
And two, you know, over time, when you get really good at a metric, you may not need to watch it all the time. Rotate them out. Bring up the next ones you need to look at.
Mm-hmm. So now, okay, so you start with measure, then you have empower.
Mm-hmm. And then what's really important is publishing. So again, this is a way to let employees and others know that these metrics and these measures and what you're doing are important. So when we publish those in what we call visual factories, and we'll talk about that in just a second, employees notice. They know that this is important and they need to spend some time focusing on it. It sends that message that management is so interested in these metrics and changes that they post them publicly.
And so. Celebrate the victories, right?
Absolutely. So don't steal my thunder.
Oh, that's okay. Sorry.
Were you reading the notes before? So, but visual factories, let's talk a little bit about visual factories. They can come in all different kinds of forms. So in a manufacturing facility, if I'm walking out on a plant floor, they may have a whiteboard with charts and graphs and statistics. Those are visuals.
So the publishing is more just kind of keeping that transparency of how we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But doing it in a public way.
In a real-time way.
In a real-time way. Not just throwing them up and then 2 months later changing
them. Not like in the monthly newsletter. Like it's got to be kind of on a regular, more frequent basis.
Yeah, the more transactional, the more frequent. So if I'm doing AP processing, I may want daily metrics because mm-hmm. I need to know how frequently my exceptions are occurring in the process mm-hmm. so I can fix it quickly before mm-hmm. that problem becomes bigger and bigger and bigger.
So now is that something where you might create like a dashboard or something yep. where they can get kind of when they log on, they can get real-time results of where
another visual factory. Yeah.
Right.
Yep. And in call centers, we've seen overhead monitors that monitor all the call activity, mm-hmm. Who's on hold, how long they've been on hold, things of that nature, what's important as a metric for that call center. So different types. But when you display results, it turbocharges your productivity.
Do you have research? Is there research on that?
I'll give you an example of one little company that I worked with. They're a consumer products company. They had a large amount of waste in one of their raw materials. And now when we looked at it, we knew what the root cause was. It wasn't difficult for us to figure out, but we wanted to experiment. And we wanted to go out and publish the graphs and the metrics around this raw material out in the plant and mm-hmm. just leave it, not say anything or do anything. So it had a graph with high waste and that was increasing over the months. And so we left it out there for about a month and we came back and started regraphing and we saw a decline in the waste till it was almost nil. So we started asking the employees, hey, What happened here? Well, we didn't realize the waste, and so we created a new process for rotating the bins. So, again, we
So you didn't even have to do anything other than just make them aware.
Yeah, there's a, yes, about scientific, there is a concept called the Hawthorne effect, mm-hmm. And the Hawthorne effect basically is, you know, the act of observing somebody changes their behavior. Mm-hmm. So as soon as you start to publish metrics, they know they're being observed. And so then they notice things like scrap. Maybe even they didn't even have the information before, but now they do. Or even if they did, they thought nobody was watching. And now that you're observing them, their behaviors will change. And I would say that on average, if we just change the behaviors of putting a good continuous improvement program in place or the OPMS in place without ever changing any of the processes directly, you typically get about a 20% increase in productivity just because people now know that they're being
people
observed.
People are paying attention.
It's,
right.
It's important, and the company finds it important, and they're monitoring it.
It's like Orange Theory. Have you ever been there?
No.
Gym?
Mm-hmm.
They have a gym where it puts everybody's stats up on the wall, and then you see how you're doing relative to everybody else, and you see how you're doing personally. And that inspires you to do more.
Okay. I'll make sure I go there.
It's not for everybody. But they're using that same principle of making it public.
Absolutely.
And then letting me know where I'm at so that I can behave differently if I want a different outcome.
I mean, this OPMS system isn't just for shared services. It's for entire organizations,
right.
Operations, sales.
Children.
Children.
It does. It
yes,
works. It works for your children too.
It does work. So the next pillar, our number four, is communicate. And this is really important.
You said communicate three times
I
earlier.
I did.
So that's how important
yes,
it was.
It is. This is really important. What we're doing here is we're creating a behavioral routine mm-hmm. where we're giving the employees an opportunity to share their voice. So this is where we're bringing all the measures together. We're empowering the employees who own the metrics to come to the table and share with us their issues that they've had, how they've solved it. We teach them root cause analysis. We had to dive deep into the problem and not just put a Band-Aid on a process, but actually fix it so it doesn't happen again. I know you want to say something, Frank.
Come on,
you look
Frank.
Like you're about
chomping
to say
at
something.
The bit.
We have a little competition when it comes to talking.
No.
Do I have to put a sign up to see how you're doing here?
No, it's actually processing an idea, so I'm actually good right now.
So, again, right here we're talking about behavioral routines, and this is a technique for expressing ideas because, again, we're really wanting to foster that place where people can have ideas. So we've set their metrics. They know what their goals are. We've published them. They know they're important.
And you've empowered them.
And we've empowered them. They own it. So now this is their forum to be heard mm-hmm. and to express their ideas. So we review, employee comes in, they review their accountability areas, they review their measures, they share their innovative ideas and solutions, or they come to the forum and if they can't figure out how to solve something by themselves, they bring their team together. And that group think, the paperclip example, that group think comes into play, so you group solve around.
So now in this part of this, the communication element, is this happening in a public manner as well, or is it kind of like by email?
You'll hear them huddles. We like huddles. Live meetings, so, meetings, huddles, things
so
like that.
So it might be remotely,
together.
But it is kind of face-to-face. You're trying to create that kind of team.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And keep in mind that whether management drives communication or not, communication is happening.
That's right.
Right? So if I want to make sure that the right message around what's happening is being communicated, then I'm going to have regular consistent communication with my team. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, what happens is that the teams will gather and they'll create their own dialogue and their own story about what's happening. And typically, they may not see it in the same light that you do. And, you know, we'll call it a meme or a mind virus. And so somebody says, you know, I really don't like that this is happening. And other people weren't feeling that way. And then they go, yeah, you know what? Maybe I don't like that either. And all of a sudden, these things start to spread. And that becomes the perceived truth about what's going on. So the more authentic you can be, the more timely you can be, and the more real you can be with the communication, the better job you can do to make sure that those side stories don't rise up and take any power within your organization.
So transparency is an important component to this.
Absolutely.
Transparency and structure. We want to make sure that we're covering the right things. So we talk about how to communicate through these behavioral routines. We talked about innovation ideas. We talk about sustaining. How do we sustain our process? How do we sustain our good performance? We talked about what to communicate, facts and data, root causes, and then opportunities for improvement. That's what's really important to talk about in these huddles and these meetings.
Yeah, and as you look at the generational gap, you know, one of the big things that's coming out of a lot of the studies is that there's all these perceived differences between millennials and other generations. And I think the one other thing that's been resonating with me as a true statement throughout all of it is not that really the work effort's different or their desire to work hard is different. It's the why. They want to know why they're doing the things they're doing. So if you, you know, and probably my father's generation, if he was told to do a job, they would go, okay.
He would say, okay, and right? That would be it.
In my generation, I might say, well, can you tell me a little? And if I didn't understand or didn't agree, I'd still go do what I was told to do. Now, this generation, they have access to information regularly. They get information on anything they want. And so when they go to do something and you don't give them a good why, they get frustrated. Well, I'm working really hard, or I'm working late, or I'm making this change. Why am I doing this? I don't understand.
So some key steps that we communicated from the at the workshop in this segment was you got to set up your environment. You have to create the environment so that people can come in and share ideas and they understand the whys. We have to create that culture of continuous improvement. I push the ideas, because we saw from Boardroom Inc.
How, the more the merrier.
How favorable the result is. We talked about establishing that cadence, having regular huddles, not missing those huddles, having it structured to hit those key points around root cause analysis. And, you know, appreciate small changes. It doesn't have to be a big bang of theory. It can be small changes at a time.
Right. So celebrate the wins no matter what the size.
Yes. Which leads us into number five, which is celebrate.
See, I knew. I know that's an important component at UHY, celebration.
Yeah, it is. So, you know, one of the things one of our poll customers said is that change management is about getting people to connect with what the outcome of change brings to them, not just what it brings to the organization. They have to feel valued and a part. There's all kinds of behavioral science out there that says when people are paid well and so on and so forth, what satisfaction they really get is being involved, being part of the team, feeling like they're contributing to something that's bigger than the organization. That, it, to us, is celebration. So right. We have to make them feel that.
To feel appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, there's things that you can do kind of as a system in order to do this?
Oh, there's all kinds of ideas. There's things you can do internally and externally. At our workshop, we had little roundtable discussions of, you know, what companies are doing that are out there.
And it doesn't have to be expensive, right? You don't have to be, like, giving everybody a car, right?
Nope.
Like, it could be little things. What are some examples of some maybe not super expensive ways to show your appreciation?
I mean, some of it's just really simple, just acknowledging it. And doing it publicly for certain individuals may be really valuable. But you also have to know the person, because doing it publicly for some people may cause them more sense of embarrassment than doing it privately. So, you know, the little touches, you know, even simple things like gift cards or allowing them the chance to go out to a lunch or something that just makes them recognize that the time that they took to share the idea, it was appreciated by you and the organization, whether it's implemented or not. It doesn't have to be a correct idea. It just has to be the fact that they shared an idea, because that idea may spawn the next idea and the next one, which really was the one that made the biggest difference.
Yeah. One of my clients actually issues these little $5 bills called Bob Bucks. Mm-hmm. And when somebody brings an idea to the table, whether they use it or not, he hands out five Bob Bucks. And once a month, they do a big breakfast in their facility, and people can turn in their Bob Bucks. So it means something to them.
Right. And it's probably a big deal. They take pride, and it shows that the organization cares. And it probably works on multiple levels.
Peer-to-peer recognition is huge. Home Depot does the Homer Awards, and where a peer can give a peer a public award, and they make a big deal out of it. They gather people together. They, you know, somebody gives the other person a Homer Award, and they clap and celebrate, and it means something.
Right. They can create their own kind of currency that's company-wide that the individuals, like, you know, the person two cubes down could say, oh, they helped me out, and they can give them some sort of a reward.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we at UHY, we use an employee engagement tool, and it allows people to, you know, we do an anonymous pulse surveys every week, and it gives people an opportunity to share ideas, whether they want to share their name or not, anonymously or publicly. It allows them to do a shout out to a team member that could then get shared at a team meeting. But the tool also allows for private one-on-one acknowledgments. So you can say, I want to recognize my team member, and I could send something to Cindy and just say, hey, thank you for helping me the other day. So it's a way that it's not just from management down to the team. It's peer-to-peer. It's staff to leader. Everybody wants to be recognized. Everybody wants to be appreciated. So if you create the culture where it's happening at all directions, you help sustain that and it grows with you as an organization.
And it's important, though, that there could be kind of a flip side. If somebody, if you're helping somebody and they're not acknowledging you, once you have this culture, you know, you might feel some resentment. So how do you manage around that?
Well, what I'll typically tell somebody is, look, you know, when you help somebody, you shouldn't have an expectation of acknowledgement or help back from that individual. You just have to trust it's going to come back to you in other ways. So always do the right thing. Always help somebody when you can. And whether they acknowledge it or recognize it isn't really the most important thing. It's the fact that usually, you know, there's studies that show that giving gratitude and supporting others releases endorphins, and it actually just makes you feel better, just the act of helping somebody. And then again, it'll come back to you in other ways.
And I would imagine if you keep doing this over time, then you're going to be attracting more and more people that have the attitude that they want to appreciate people, and you're going to get a kind of a better productivity out of your staff.
Yeah, again, there's studies out there that say that there's a 23% increase in employee satisfaction when celebrate programs are put in place. According to the U.S. Department of Labor, 64% of Americans leave their jobs because they don't feel appreciated. So this is huge.
Now, are companies by and large doing this, embracing this, or is this kind of...
We're seeing a lot. We can see some that have gone stale and they need to be revisited. Mm-hmm. And we see some that don't have it at all.
So now, if something has gone stale, like so at one point they thought this was important and they put a program in place, how often should they be kind of refreshing it?
Just like anything, you have to have continuous monitoring, right? So you have to make sure that at some point, because it may not be that the program itself is failing. It may be that individuals within the program aren't performing and now starting to break down. And so you have to know what's actually causing the turn, and you have to have information. And that's where, you know, I'm an advocate for things like employee pulse surveys and things like that, because it allows you to quickly identify when something in the culture is changing, when something in the communication is breaking down. Having those key metrics in the OPMS, you know, Cindy mentioned the metrics, but there's also an accountability structure that goes along with that, which means that there's a cadence to the manager meetings with staff. There's a cadence to the manager's meetings with senior managers. There's meetings with senior managers with executives. And as long as you keep that cadence going and you don't break it down or stop doing it, you'll be fine, because information is coming real time. Where we see it really fail is when companies decide to stop. And that's really the worst of both worlds. It's almost better to have never started than to start a program and then stop it.
Because it's not a set it and forget it.
No, right? Not at all.
You got to nurture this thing. And once you're on board, you're going to kind of be committed to it.
I mean, think about it. The workshop was continuous improvement. We need to continuously improve our how do we celebrate, right?
Right. So now, when you did this, were people sharing stories about how some people are doing good, some people aren't doing so well?
Yeah, so we had breakouts after each pillar, and the different tables were able to share their ideas, some pain points that they were experiencing with each other.
You know, Cindy was moderating. I was sitting at one of the tables and walking around a little bit. And I'll be honest, out of the, I mean, I think it was originally capped at 75. I think there's close to 100 people in the room. I will say that there was nobody there that went, wow, we have this, that we have this down. I think that the stories you're hearing is that we tried to start it. It stopped. We didn't know how to start. We're doing it. It's not really working the way we expected. And a lot of it goes back to they really don't understand why. But when you deal with human behavior, there is that consistency component that is just gets lost. And that's where I think that our approach or helping companies build that consistency into their model is so critical.
Now, if a company wanted to find out more about what happened at the workshop, do you have a white paper? Is there some information about how somebody can learn more about this?
We do. We have a white paper that summarizes the five pillars and talks about those. And we also have a workshop that's available to be taught at their company also.
Oh, is that kind of a baby step way to kind of explore this?
Definitely.
And so, what does that look like? What occurs if they choose that?
Choose which? The workshop or the
workshop?
The workshop would be very similar to what we did in at the SSON, but it'd be about a three-hour workshop and bringing in cross-functional teams, grouping those, and we conduct the same workshop and same
interactive. But not with paper clips.
Not with paper.
You have clips. A surprise.
We have right? a surprise.
It mix it up a little bit.
We'll have some different stuff. Yeah.
But it's not, so you'll go through the pillars and they'll get mm-hmm. to kind of experience it in, yes. in real life to really get yeah. an understanding. So it kind of sinks yeah. in.
It's a highly interactive workshop. So mm-hmm. the participants will be able to create some measures or come away with some different measures and how to publish and just start thinking about their particular areas and how this could be relevant and how they could put it in there.
So it's very actionable.
Very actionable.
And then where would they go to learn more about that?
Well, they can go to www.uhy-us.com. Mm-hmm. They can reach out to Cindy or myself directly. Mm-hmm. Cindy, your email?
CK Hanafy, HANNAFEY at uhy-us.com.
Or you can reach out to me at FFennello, so it's FFENELLO at uhy-us.com.
Well, thank you so much for talking about this important topic of change management and this continuous improvement culture. I guess if more people were doing it, then the world would be a little better, huh?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Is that, your work life probably improves. Everybody would like to work in an environment like that, I would think.
Job satisfaction goes up.
We like it.
Right. And productivity goes up. So it's all...
Right. It's like a no
lose. It's all
lose.
A cycle. Yep.
Well, this is Lee Cantor for Cause and Effect Radio. We will see you all next time.
Today's episode of Cause and Effect Radio has been brought to you by UHY Advisors. For more information, visit uhy-us.com.